Going Linux, episode 239, Linux and how it's put together. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, Linux and how it's put together.
Well, Bill, I have been using my Chromebook for just about everything.
No, really?
Really, yeah.
No, absolutely. You're kidding me. No. You're just a Chromebook fanboy.
I am. I'm becoming a Chromebook fan. You know, I don't even care that Google knows when I change my underwear.
Well, hey, at least you're using yours. That Windows 8 tablet is worthless.
Okay. All right, we can talk about that too.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm using the Chromebook for... that's why you can't get me on Skype, because Skype doesn't run on the Chromebook. And, you know, give me Google Chat or whatever, but Skype not so much, because the Chromebook is nice and light. It's easy to carry around. The battery lasts for a long time, which is really the thing that I wanted, to be able to sit in front of the TV and use that kind of device as opposed to carrying my my computer that I use to do the recording on into the family room. So the Chromebook just fits that bill perfectly. Browsing the internet, just checking email, doing the light kind of stuff you normally do with your computer. And I've even gone so far as to venture into the world of installing full-fledged Linux. Now, I haven't got full-fledged Linux installed yet. There are two ways to do it on this Samsung Chromebook. Yes, I have the old model, not the new model that just came out. But you can take something called Krubuntu, which is more like a dual boot sort of thing. But I think that the images that they have for Krubuntu and my particular model and version... something's incompatible somewhere because it just flat out won't install. So I've tried, I've re-imaged it a few times and still no luck. So my next step is to try something called Crouton.
Yes. Crouton.
Crouton.
Reminds me of a salad.
The Chromebook names are even funnier than the Linux names. So Crouton is another way to... it's not so much dual boot. It's almost like virtual machine, but not quite. The way Crouton works is it runs an Ubuntu variant on top of the Chrome operating system. So it actually makes use of the Chrome operating system as its base. So it uses the kernel that came with Chromebook, and it runs this on top of it, so you're actually running both operating systems simultaneously. The best way to describe it is more like a virtual machine than like dual boot.
Yeah.
So I haven't tried that yet, but that's my next step. And if that doesn't work, I'm still not giving up on the Chromebook, even without running Linux on it. It's just a nice little device, and I'm pretty happy with it.
Well, you know, the number one selling notebook on Amazon is the Chromebook.
I'm not surprised.
It is.
I am not surprised. And, you know, when it first came out, people were saying, hey, you know, people are going to be disappointed they can't run their Windows applications on it. And, you know, the same sort of arguments they say about Linux. Oh, yeah. But for some reason, I've seen the Chromebook take off, unlike other varieties of Linux that folks have tried to sell in stores. And I think part of it is because it's just super, super simple, easy to use, and they don't have all the complexity that comes along with a standard Linux installation. It just does what it's supposed to do, and there are plenty of applications for it as well, and it just works.
Yeah, well, sometimes I wish I had a little Chromebook, because I've been lugging around my 9.5-pound Republic of Gamers machine, my big beast. That thing, man, is a ton. I mean, you'd think 9 pounds wouldn't make a big difference, but you lug that sucker around all day, it does. And that Chromebook is like, what, 1 pound?
It's a little more than that, but more like 2.
Yeah, but it's not 9.
Yeah.
But anyway, I've been trying to be a good net citizen and been touring some of the Linux distros.
Uh-huh.
And I've been looking at a distro called Slax, I believe that's how you say it. It's a Slackware-based distro. It's supposed to make it easier to install Slackware, but it's 100%, you know, backwards compatible. It operates the same, it's just supposed to be a little nicer. So I downloaded that, and I said, well, you know what, I'll just go ahead and throw a few more of these distros that, you know, they use BitTorrent for a majority of their distribution. And I've been watching, and Slackware has just been going and going and going and going. And I'm like, who are these people? I never hear from them.
Right.
So anyway, anybody that has Slackware, I'm looking for a live CD or DVD of Slackware. It doesn't have to be installable. It would be nice, but it doesn't have to. But everyone I run into, you have to install. So if anybody knows of any Slackware live CD or DVD, how about letting me know? And then I have just a teeny small rant. I just bought some DVDs, you know. I went to the store, I found the DVDs, I paid my money, I brought it home.
So these aren't blank DVDs, these are movies.
These are movies, okay?
Oh, okay. All right,
movies that I want to watch, that I've seen, I paid to see in the cinema, I liked it so much, I want to add it to my collection.
So you paid to see it in the cinema, and then you paid to buy the DVD.
I did. Okay. I didn't even do the digital thing. I said I want to have a physical copy because I just like the movie that much, and I want to put it with my collection because, you know, I like to rewatch movies every once in a while.
Sure, I think I know where this is going. Okay.
Okay, so I put the DVD, and I'm sitting back, and I'm ready. Got my popcorn. Got my Diet Coke. I'm ready to go. And up pops this piracy warning that I'm a pirate. You can't pirate it. It's got $250,000. And I'm sitting there going, listen, dude, I just bought this damn thing. And you're telling me I have to look at this every time? It's ridiculous.
Well, apparently so. But anyway, you're a pirate until proven otherwise.
Apparently, but it's like, I understand they don't want people to pirate, but, you know, piracy is there's a proven argument on piracy. Piracy drops when you offer people what they want. And 9 out of 10 people, or I'll say 8 out of 10 people, will go buy it if they can get it. But if they can't get it, they will pirate it because they want it.
Right.
So if you've noticed that if you go to any of these stores now, there's a lot more of those TV shows and movies out that, you know, people want. And piracy's dropping because people, it's not worth it to go pirate because it's got, you know, different qualities, and you get, you know, if you're running a Windows or a Mac, you could get viruses, and it's just not worth it. You know, you get in trouble. And so these people say, look, that's what I want. I'll give you the $60. You know, it's a little high, but hey, it's better than all the alternative. But then you still have to listen to their piracy rant. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Do this. People want stuff. Put it out there. They'll give you the money if you price it right. You know, just, you know, you've got to give people what they want. And if you do, piracy's dropping. And if you look, piracy's at its lowest levels since they started doing it.
Mm-hmm.
End of rant.
Okay. All right.
All right.
All right. Shall we get into our episode?
Yeah. I have to say, I want to give credit to the following website for the info in this episode. I didn't put it together. I was putting together something like it, but when I run across this, they did it better than I could. So I'm using their layout, and it was done by, and I'm going to murder his name, by Ramesh Natarajan. It must be an Indian name.
Yeah, let me take a stab at it.
Yeah, you go for it.
Ramesh Natarajan.
Natarajan?
That's what it sounds like to me when I look at it. Okay. So hopefully but anyway, we didn't mess up your name too badly.
Yeah, he put it together, and the link to the website is in the show notes. They got some great illustrations about how Linux is put it together. Plus, their site's pretty decent with some other interesting articles, so I encourage you to go look at it. But okay. Like I said, I didn't put this together. I was putting something like this together, but I couldn't do it as well as he did. So I'm standing on the shoulders of giants here.
Okay, well, that's the best way to do stuff.
Yeah.
Why reinvent the wheel?
Yeah.
So you and I, Bill, and many of our listeners, at least the ones who have switched anyway, use Linux every day. But do we really know how the system works and how it's put together? And that's really our topic today. We go out and get the disk, download the disk or a USB key and install it, and everything just works for the most part. And unless you're a Linux geek or somebody who's been at it a long time and have dug into it, many of us don't know all the ins and the outs and the background of Linux and what makes it tick. So today we thought we'd take some time to talk about the Linux system itself, the file system, and how it's put together. And as you said, Bill, we're heavily relying on Ramesh's work here, so we're giving him credit for putting this stuff together. Thanks, yes. Ramesh.
Appreciate it, Ramesh. Okay, so let's begin. First, let's start with root. And every single file and directory starts from the root directory. Only root user has write privileges under this directory. So that would be the administrator. Mm-hmm. Please note that the /root is the root user's home directory, which is not the same as /your directory.
Okay, so just for those people following along at home, if you open the file manager, whatever you're using for file manager, it will normally open up into the /home/your username directory, your home directory, essentially. So if you go up two levels, that should take you to /. And this is the root directory that we're talking about here, the root folder, if you will. And in there, you'll see the folders that we're going to talk about, the ones that make up the Linux system. So we'll talk about bin and boot and CD-ROM and dev and etsy and home and all those other good things. So root, the slash directory is the top level directory, right?
That's right. And just remember, only a root user has write privileges in this directory. And what that means is they hate that the root can only make changes.
Right, exactly. Okay. Now, let's take a look at one of the directories just below the root directory. That would be /bin, B-I-N. And this contains user binaries. And binaries are executable files. So this contains binary executables. And the common Linux commands you use in a single user mode are located under the bin directory. And commands that are used by all of the users of the system are also located here. For example, ps, ls, ping, grep, cp, all of those commands are sitting there in the bin directory, binary, executables, and that's what it contains.
Yeah, right below that is sbin, or /sbin, and that's the system binaries. Just like /bin, /sbin also contains binary executables, but the Linux commands located under this directory are used typically by the system administrator for system maintenance purposes. For example, iptables, reboot, fdisk, ifconfig, and swap on.
Okay, our next one. So that takes care of the binaries. The user binaries are in bin, and the system binaries are in S bin. Okay, the next one is /etc, or some people pronounce it etsy. This directory contains your configuration files. And these are configuration files that are required by the programs you have installed or the applications you have installed on your computer. It also contains startup and shutdown shell scripts that are used to start and stop individual programs. So the etsy directory contains all of those. And the examples of things you might find in there are the resolve.conf or conf, resolve.conf, or logrotate.conf. Files that I've never looked at.
Well, now it says that the etc has the shutdown and startup scripts for all the programs, right?
That's what it says.
So, okay. So, I guess when you install a program, they throw the configuration file into etc.
Yeah, so there are a couple of places your configuration files can go.
Oh,
one
okay.
is the standard configuration file for the program when you install it.
Okay.
You know, so many of those programs need a configuration file to get started. But you might, through your settings, either if it's a graphical user interface, the settings that you change in the program itself, or if it's a command line, the configuration file you might edit, that could be a configuration file that's contained in your home directory.
Okay.
And that would, generally speaking, that takes precedence over the configuration file that comes with the program.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ever want to go back to the default configuration, one way to do that is to take the configuration file out of etsy and copy it over into your configuration folder in your home directory.
Hey, that's slick.
Depending on where it actually gets deposited in your home directory, it might be directly in the home, or it may have a subfolder for it. But either way, you have the default configuration file sitting there in etsy.
That's cool. I never thought of that. Okay, our next one is /dev, and that's basically the device files. And it contains the device files that include terminal devices, USB, or any device attached to the system. For example, it could be /dev TTY1 or /dev USB MON. So anything that's attached to it, this has the device files for your system.
Yeah, so device files. Well, everything in Linux is a text file, right? All configurations are text files. And even these links to the CD-ROM drive or the USB drive or your hard drive are all text files, at least are represented by text files in Linux. And for those external devices and even the internal devices on a laptop or whatever, they show up in that dev directory.
Yes, they do.
Okay. All right. The next one is /proc, P-R-O-C. And proc is an abbreviation for process information. This is a virtual file system or a pseudo file system, and it contains information about the processes that are currently running on your computer. For example, the process IDs for a particular application that's running would appear in the /proc/, and then the number, a folder for the number of the process that's running. So if you actually open the proc folder, the proc directory, we're using the terms directory and folder interchangeably in our discussion here. If you open the /proc folder, you'll find that it contains a whole lot of folders with numbers. And these are the process IDs of the applications that are running or have been running on your computer. And that directory with the number contains information about the process. And examples of what appear in here are like /proc/uptime and those kinds of files.
Okay. So basically, it contains all the information about what's going on in your system.
Yes.
Okay. Our next one is var, which stands for variable files. content of the files that are expected to grow can be found under this directory. This includes system log files, packages and database files, emails, print queues, lock files, temp files needed across reboots, and they're all in directories like var lib, var mail, var log, var temp, var spool, etc., etc.
Yeah, okay, so by variable we mean variable sizes?
Yeah, the files in this directory are expected to grow because it contains the system log files, the packages, database files, etc., right. You know, emails, things like that. You know, when you send something to the printer, it goes into what they call a spool.
Yeah.
And that is located in the variable files too.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. So the next one is /temp or TMP. There's no E in there. It's TMP. And as you would suspect, this is for temporary files. And temporary files would be files that are created by the system and the users that are only needed on a temporary basis. So files here are deleted when the system is rebooted because they are temporary.
Yes. Okay, our next one is the user, or /user, and that's our user programs. And this directory contains binaries, libraries, documentation, and source code for second-level programs. User bin contains binary files for user programs. If you can't find a user binary, look under /bin or /user/bin. User sbin contains binary files for the system administrators. If you can't find a system binary under sbin, look under user/sbin. And so then you have user lib, which contains libraries for user bin and user sbin. So we know that when we say bin, that's binary files, and then it's user/sbin is system binaries. Then we have user local, which contains user programs that you install from source. For example, when you install Apache from source, it goes under user local Apache 2.
Okay. And user, as the name of the directory or the folder, is spelled USR. Again,
yes.
No E in this one.
Yes.
So
just remember, user contains the binaries, libraries, and documentation, source code for your programs.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, /home is, as you might suspect, your home directory. Well, it's not your home directory. It's where all of the home directories for all of the users reside.
Ah.
So home directories are, of course, where you store your personal files. So the files that you create, the word processor files, the spreadsheet files, the application files that you might create, the podcast files that we create, the audio files, all of that, they all go into the home directory.
Awesome.
Into our own personal home directory. So within the home directory, /home, there will be a directory for each of the regular normal users of the system. And that may just be you if you've got a single user system.
Yeah.
So a /home/Bill or /home/Larry or whatever you've got for your username on Linux will be in that home directory.
Awesome.
The only home directory that's not under home is the one for the root user, and that's under /root. Okay.
All right.
The next one is /boot, and /boot is actually just the bootloader and files related to the bootloader. So the kernel, initrd, vmlinux, grub files are all under /boot. And some specific examples of files in there would be initrd.img- and then the number for your kernel, which might be, in this example, 2.6.32-24-generic.
You're running an old kernel.
Yeah. So, but anyway, that's what's contained in the /boot directory.
Our 12th one is /lib, and that is basically our system libraries. And this contains library files that support the binaries located under /bin and /sbin. And this includes library files that are either ld asterisk or lib asterisk dot so asterisk. For example, ld slash 2.11 dot so, or lib in curses dot so 5.7. So from what I understand from this, it's just, these are just some more files that support the bin and sbin.
Right. The libraries.
Yeah, libraries, you know, so they have some really weird names, and that's would be one that I would never even look at. So anyway.
Right. Yeah, typically you wouldn't have to unless you're missing a library to make a program run, and then you have to go get the library and put it in the right place.
But it's nice to know where to put it.
Right.
To make it work.
As you mentioned earlier, there's a /user/lib, and then there's a /lib. And now we know that the /lib libraries support the system level binaries that are under /bin or /sbin, and the ones that actually support the user level binaries that are under /user/bin or /user/sbin, you'll want to have those in the /user/lib.
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense once you think about it.
Yeah, if you sit down and think about it, when you reading this and you start looking at how things are set up, it really makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Okay, 13 is /OPT or optional add-on applications. OPT stands for optional, and it contains add-on applications from individual vendors. Add-on applications should be installed under either /OPT or /OPT/subdirectory. So, what kind of applications would that be, really?
Well, you might find Skype in there. You might things like TeamViewer. Those things that are typically commercial software. Uh-huh. They may be free or they may be paid for applications. But if they're commercial applications that are written by a company as opposed to open source software that's written by the community, they're going to put that typically in /OPT. In some distributions, other distributions put it in another place, but that's where these ones go, as opposed to going in the user binaries, slash USR slash BIN. They'll put them in at /OPT. So again, if you can't find the files for the program that you've installed under /user/bin, you might want to try under /opt.
Oh, okay.
Right?
All right.
Okay, next one is /MNT, and that stands for mount. This is the mount directory, and this is where temporary mounting can be done for devices that you may have external to your system, like a USB drive or a CD-ROM drive and that sort of thing. So sysadmins can mount file systems in the /MNT directory. You may create a separate folder or directory to mount your other devices if you're mounting them manually. But the /MNT is the directory that's meant to do that from a sysadmin perspective. And yeah, the next one is /media. And this is kind of related to that /MNT, except that this is where you would want to mount removable media devices. So this is where you want to mount file systems for those devices. And typically /media is where the system automatically puts the mount points for a CD-ROM drive or other removable media. And so you'll find within that /media directory, you'll find a /CD-ROM directory or a /floppy if you still have a floppy drive. Hey, some people still do. You know, don't make fun.
Okay.
And you might find a /media/CD recorder if you have. I think the most CDs these days end up going in there as /media/CD-ROM, even if it's a read-write device.
Yeah.
But originally there was a CD recorder that they might have put in there in the media directory as well.
Oh, okay. Well, you might have just a CD recorder in your system.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. The last one we're going to talk about is number 16, which is /SRV service data. And SRV stands for service, and it contains server-specific services-related data. So something that was probably one that you'll never look at. So
Yeah. Well, and I opened my /SRV directory on my Linux Mint 16 box here, and it's empty. So, and I'm not running any server software on there, so it's going to be empty.
So wait a minute. You just got a plug-in for Linux Mint in there.
I did.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, I hadn't noticed.
Okay. Well, right.
I know between my Chromebook and Linux Mint, I think we're doing okay today.
Okay. You know, I know this has been a ton of information, but I have to say it was really interesting to see how Linux is put together. And I personally learned a lot. It kind of gives you a feeling on how things work together, and it takes one of the layers of the Linux mystery away, because you see that it's laid out very logically. And if you were hoping that now that you see that it's, you know, the file system's not to be scared of, you might take a little time and look in some of these files and see, you know, how things work. But Larry, there was one directory I couldn't find.
What's that one?
It was the /DLL files.
Yes. Well, you might want to look on your Windows 8 machine.
You mean the one that is basically sitting as a brick?
Yeah, that one.
That was the worst thing I ever did. Should have just got another Chromebook.
Yeah, you got to do that, Bill. You know, sell it or something, you know.
But, you know, it doesn't work well. I mean, it's like worthless. It doesn't work. Anyway,
back to our file system for a minute. Let's not get on that rant again.
Yeah.
So file systems, there are a lot more folders on your system and a lot more directories on your system. We highlighted the most important ones, the ones you'll see on just about any Linux system out there. And these are the ones that are the mystery to new Linux users, because they're not something that you would see on other systems, except maybe a Mac. But even on the Mac, they may be a little bit different, and there may be more, there may be fewer, and used for different things. Yeah. But certainly on a Windows machine, this is all foreign stuff.
Well, you know, if you really think about it, if you try to get this level of information on a Windows system, you can't be done.
Oh, right. Absolutely. Because it's not arranged this way.
Yeah, it's not arranged this way. You know, you have... you know, we're kidding about the DLL files, but, you know, these dynamic link libraries, you know, that's they're just a mess. And that's why a lot of these Windows machines just have nervous breakdowns after you use them for a while. It's just not as simple. You know, when they designed Linux, they really designed it to make sense. And, you know, you can dig down all the way down to the source code in Linux. You can't do that with Windows.
Right, exactly, because it's a proprietary operating system.
So when someone says Linux is hard to understand, you can say, no, it's actually pretty straightforward.
Yep, it's all meant to make sense.
Yes.
Okay, Bill, I think that's it for our episode. Short episode this time, but packed with a lot of information. You may want to go back and listen to this a couple of times, and we'll try to put some illustrations in the show notes or something like that, or at the very least, link to the article.
The article is linked.
Yeah, so we'll do that. Ramesh has a nice diagram in there that would help you in understanding this. So
yeah,
you might want to go back and take a look at his diagram and listen to the episode again with that in front of you.
And if you have any questions, or we really messed this up, let us know.
Oh, I'm sure our listeners will do that. Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Bill, one more time.
And
our next episode will be listener feedback. Until then, go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe. We are the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux Podcast Google Plus community.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.